Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to yet another show. Today we got Will Meadows.
Sarah Meadows.
Kevin Delp.
Melissa Delp.
Ryan Pills.
And Sidekick Larry.
In the house.
I'm excited to be back. It's been a long time since we've been a part of the podcast.
That's right. We've been all over the U.S. and played lots of games with lots of people.
Did some family visiting. Got to connect with quite a few board gamers across the states as we traveled. Sarah's folks are from Omaha, or from Nebraska, the largest city there in the whole state, being Omaha.
Geography lesson by Will Meadows. That's
all he knows right there.
Yeah, when we go west of Omaha, I'm lost, totally lost. But in Omaha is Spielbound, which is a pretty popular board game cafe, and we got to hang out there with some friends, which is always a lot of fun. I jumped into the episode and forgot to give you guys the summary of what we're going to be talking about this episode. This is our best party games that we enjoy to play with friends episode. So we're going to be talking about some of our favorite party games. We've also got a couple Kickstarters that we'll let you know about, and some other events that are coming up, too, that we're going to be talking about during the episode.
And a giveaway.
And a giveaway. So while we were gone, having lots
and
of fun.
At the end.
All over the country. Oh, yeah. A little Loki action, maybe? Is that going to happen after the credits?
After the credits.
All right. Stick around.
That's episodes 3 and 4.
Bum, bum, bum. What's the music effect for Loki?
It's
crazy. I can't do it, though.
That's
close. That's close. So while we were off traveling the world, what are some of the games that you guys have been playing? I actually got to listen to the podcast. You guys are pretty entertaining, I got to say. I enjoyed.
I was going to say, you said we haven't been in podcasts. Like, well, we've been doing it. Like, where have you been? Like, in the same spot every 2 weeks.
I'm pretty sure we missed like two in a row at least. So it's been a while.
We have had a great time playing games. Thankful that the Meadows are back so that, you know, we can all play games again together. We had a community game night just a few days ago, so got to play some games there, got to teach games, old and new. One game that Melissa and I played recently was the new Terraforming Mars Ares Expedition.
And we had the retail copy of the game, so it doesn't have all of the features of the upgraded Kickstarter, but this is basically Terraforming Mars meets Race for the Galaxy. So you have phases that you select, like Race for the Galaxy. So I'm like, oh, I want to develop this turn. Kevin might pick construct. Someone else might pick production. And only the phases that are picked will be done that round. And the person who chose that phase gets an extra bonus. So it's kind of that follow mechanic. Puerto Rico also has it. And it definitely played quicker than Terraforming Mars. But I would say longer than Race for the Galaxy. It was our first game, so all four of us were learning it. But it played pretty smoothly. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, it definitely played smoothly, faster than Terraforming Mars. I would say, though, card play-wise, I would say it's just as intense in the decision-making that you're doing with how am I getting points, how am I upping the heat, the oxygen, all those kinds of things that you think about in Terraforming Mars with upping your Terraform rating, your Terra rating to get points. Those are all decisions on how the cards interplay with each other and things like that. I would say that's very similar to the base game, and you have those same things here now.
Now, in each phase, once you go to that phase, you're supposed to play simultaneously, so you're not really waiting on people's turns. But I did feel like, oh, I don't know what my friend Ben across the table is doing. How is he raising his oxygen that much?
So Melissa would ask once in a while.
It was a learning game. I was just making sure. But I had a lot of discounts to putting things down, and I was trying to do the math in my head, and I was struggling a little bit. Okay, so I have 4 off if it has this tag. Oh, but it also has this one, so it's another 12 off. And then I can spend this, but I can also spend this other thing because I have a special card. And I'm trying to do that as other people are simultaneously playing. And you're supposed to do one phase at a time, but I was a little slow. So sometimes I was still working on that first phase of putting a specific card down when the others are like, I've already produced
30 takes.
It's like,
I'm already done this round.
So for me, mental math, if I have pen and paper, I'm fine with math. But mental math is a little bit of a struggle.
I think after we played, I think we decided that based on some of the discounts that Melissa had, she could have incorporated that into her sort of her money in how she's keeping track of all that so that she wouldn't have to worry about that in the future. It just would, you'd have to be extra careful that you didn't double up. Like, it would be easy to cheat in a way.
Oh, so it sounds like my type of game after all.
Yes. Don't play this game with Will because there's no accountability.
Oh, perfect. Let's do it.
I will say, though, some of the, because it's a retail version, the player board that you are, that you're using, you're moving cubes, like, you know, up and down and around on the board. And I will say, if you bump it or someone bumps the table, like those cubes, there's like 6 or 7 cubes that are tracking different things. If it bumps it at all, it could mess up your...
Now, Terraforming Mars has an inset.
Right.
Is there a deluxe version that has an inset?
Actually, I don't think the original Terraforming Mars had it, but third-party people were creating.
Okay. I must have only played third-party.
Yeah, I believe at least one of the Kickstarter versions. I don't know if they had different levels, but I have seen inset boards online, so I'm assuming that was something with the Kickstarter.
Always good. Got to get that inset. We had an opportunity this afternoon to play Doodle Dungeon. Which way does it go?
Doodle Dungeon.
From Pegasus Peel. That was fun. I enjoyed that. Did you guys already talk about this in a previous episode?
I don't remember.
Well, we're talking about it now. I think everybody has played it. Is that correct?
I know. You said you listened to our last podcast. If it wasn't on there, then we didn't talk about it.
It doesn't
Will
exist.
Will doesn't have a good memory, so it's hard to know. It was also why we were driving, so sometimes very distracting in the car with children.
Don't say that. I was driving. It was not distracting.
No, well, I drove, so I know. You were just listening.
Did the podcast when the car screeched its brakes, did it freak you out while you were listening to
right?
it?
Buckle up. I buckled up when we got to that part. Doodle Dungeon is a roll and write game where you're actually building a dungeon that you don't want the hero to survive. So you're like the bad guy, I guess, although in your own eyes, you're a good guy. And you're trying to add walls and critters, creatures, monsters, treasures that you're trying to hide along the way. And then once you've finished building your dungeon, you're going to pass your paper to the player on your left. And they're going to kind of chart the course that the hero is going to take through the path, through the dungeon, and then pass it back to you. And then you're going to use the deck of cards that you've collected, that you've drafted over the course of the game, to help your hero die sooner and help the other heroes live longer. Because you want the most destruction, the most living monsters at the end of the game in order to win. And it was neat. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed
it. Yeah, you're kind of playing as the GM is basically how that would be. You don't necessarily want the heroes to survive because you're playing
evil
as the monster.
GM.
That's right.
Ryan, what was your experience? Did you get to play it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. We played with some promo cards, which I exploited and may have slowed the game down significantly. Probably shouldn't have played with them.
We took those out before introducing it to Will and Sarah.
Because we knew I would exploit it.
Yeah, it seemed super powerful, so I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do that.
Every turn.
No, not only did you do that, you got all the cards that had that power.
Oh, I think... Katie had one of them. There's 3 of them, or
I think there might be 4. You had 3 of the 4. Yeah.
I only had 2, but I had another card that let me draw a card from the discard back into my hand. So I was like, wow, this is obviously the overpowered card. It's the one I'm going to pick.
Good decision. I think we're actually going to put together a Viewpoints video on this one since the majority of us...
It's already going to be out by the time you hear this.
Yeah, so check that one out. You get everybody's opinions on it, and you can see the game for yourself and check out all that sweet B-roll that Kevin and I shot today with our... steady hands.
That's right. Will and Sarah, they came back, but they decided that they had friends that were coming from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to be gone for dinner. Have fun. And we're like, oh, okay. Well, we need to play a game while they're gone. And what should we play? What's Will's
favorite? Let's play Will's favorite game while he's Will's gone, so he cannot game. Play.
Jerks.
So we pulled out Captain Sonar and had a grand old time.
Now, the cool thing is we were playing with Jonah's dad, who is a naval. I'm just kidding. He's not naval. I think he's military, but army. But he had a great time. As I walked in, he was all about the being the captain, getting to tell everybody where to go, sink the ship. Looked like you guys were having a great time. I was definitely jealous. And we'll definitely talk about more of our favorite party games in a moment, but we should right now jump into our Kickstarter connection.
Kickstarter conniption.
This episode, Will's going to tell us about one game coming to Kickstarter. That's what do you got?
That's why I was ready to jump in. Here we go. Another video that you can find on our channel. Sarah and I just did a Kickstarter preview for the game Flicking Finches from Meriday Games. This is a dexterity game that has players acting as a family, I guess, of finches living on the Galapagos Islands, trying to get the attention of one named Darwin, guy who just happens to be hopping around from island to island. In the game, you will be flicking your individually illustrated finch tokens, each having three different characteristics on them, and you'll be trying to get them into the range of Darwin, which is, he looks kind of like the robber from Catan. He's kind of hopping around from different spots on your neoprene mat that comes with the game. And if you can get into range of him, then you can chirp. I almost said tweet. You can do something.
It's chirp, yeah.
To get his attention and score points based on your bird's match to the drawings in his book.
He's trying to find the birds on the island to put in his sketchbook and find all the different characteristics that they have. So, yeah.
One of the interesting things in the game is that you have a number. You probably have, what, 5, 6, 7 tokens?
You have 8.
8 tokens. I could have kept going. And you get 3 actions on your turn. I am a terrible flicker, and so it would take me 3 flicks to get into the zone where I could score. I, of course, then didn't have an action to chirp with, and it would be the next player's turn. They, of course, would not chirp.
But what's interesting is there's a little more strategy. You only get 1 point if you have 1 characteristic matching, and 3 if you have 2, and 5 if you match all 3 characteristics. So Darwin is going to draw the bird that is closest to him if there's a chirp. So you can make the chirp noise for somebody else's token, and if it's not matching very well, they'll only get the 1 or maybe 2 points. So it is somebody else could get the closest, but maybe not match well. So you can force them to, and once you chirp and he draws your token, then it's out for the rest of the game. So it is possible to kind of thwart other people's plans.
Yeah, I actually was kind of surprised by the amount of strategy that you could have in the game. I felt like there were a lot of different approaches. You could have a bunch of your birds on the board if you wanted to. You wouldn't get to move them very often, but you kind of get a spread over the course of the map, so that might give you better opportunities to score later in the game, or you can kind of just focus on moving one bird and try to really get it where you want it to be at. For being a dexterity game and for being as light and funly illustrated as it was, it actually was a little bit more thinky than I anticipated, which was pretty neat. So if you're interested in that Kickstarter, you can check it out right now. Probably, is it live right now? When this goes live?
Yes, it'll be on Kickstarter by the time this podcast, I believe it, maybe drops. The next day.
I think it's the next day, the 13th.
It's the next day, the 13th, yeah. So that is Flicking Finches from Meriday Games.
And since you don't have a lot of Kickstarters to back this week or next week, we thought, why don't we share with you a new digital implementation of a game from Horrible Guild called Railroad Inc. Melissa wants to talk about it.
This is Railroad Inc. Challenge or Challenges, and I had a beta copy of it that I played on Steam. It is now available on Steam, Android, iOS, and it's basically Railroad Inc. It's a roll-and-write game where you're building roads and train tracks through your board, and you're going to be rolling dice, picking them, writing them on your board. But in challenges, there's going to be some goals that you're trying to achieve. And if you can achieve the goals by a certain round, you're going to get more points. if you don't achieve it, one of them is on like round three, round four, round five. But if you achieve it later, you'll still get a point, but not as much. So it gives you something to go toward beyond just the end game scoring. Now, when I was playing, I was always playing single player. I'm not sure if it has a multiplayer option or if it's just solo, but I enjoyed the game. The implementation was smooth. It worked well. I understood what I needed to do. I had played the physical game before, but the tutorial was good. And the computer draws much better than I do. So you can tell which are the roads and which are the railway tracks a lot easier. It has play against players from all over the world online or locally with your friends in a pass and play. So it looks like there are lots of different options. I've only tried the solo version. That is Railroad Inc. Challenge from Horrible Guild, a digital application.
Speaking of digital and board game action, this next month, August 20th, when are we going to Southern Fried Gaming Expo?
I think it's August 18th, 19th, and 20th.
Yeah, so that weekend, Sarah and I and Kevin and Melissa and maybe any other people, I don't know. Larry's smiling maybe, over there, are going to be hanging out at the Southern Fried Gaming Expo in Atlanta, Georgia. This is an event that we had an opportunity to go to 2 years ago, I guess. And it is a lot of fun. They mix board games with video games and pinball games.
Woohoo, pinball.
And all other types of fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty robust experience. They've got a huge convention center hall room full of like retro pinball. Tons and tons of arcade games. They've got retro console games, and then they've got a pretty large tabletop gaming area as well. We're going to be doing a couple of different sessions. What's the word for those things? Panels. We're going to be talking about some of our favorite games and hopefully giving some people some information about maybe the crossover between video games and board games. And then we'll be teaching some games. And then I think we're also going to do a pitch-a-thon, kind of like we have done at Tantrum House in the past, where we're going to give new board game designers an opportunity to pitch their games that are either coming to Kickstarter or that they're going to bring to publishers or that they're just working on and trying to put together.
And what's super cool about that is there are a couple of board game designers who have come over the last 3 or 4 years to the Pitch-a-thon, and they now work full-time as game designers. So it's really cool seeing their careers start off just from pitching a couple ideas that they had for early board game designs, and then now they're doing that full-time. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. We will have a promo code that you can use if you're thinking about going to the Southern Fried Gaming Expo. If you get on their website and you purchase your tickets and you use the promo code Tantrum House, all caps, no spaces, Tantrum House, you'll save 10% on your badge. So go do that.
And I heard that we're doing giveaway.
What? We also have 2 tickets to Tantrum. Nope, not Tantrum Con. We might have 2 of those too, but 2 tickets to Southern Fried Gaming Expo that we want to give away this episode. I don't know how to do that, but probably you could. Oh, I got it. Here we go. Go to tantrumhouse.com. There's a button.
I knew you were going to get the button.
It's the only one I got. Button on the right side that says enter current contest. If you put your email address in there this week, then in 2 weeks when we have our next podcast episode, we will, I assume by then, announce winners who have won tickets for the event. So 2 full badges. I think they're called memberships or something. We will hook you up. So go to our website, tantrumhouse.com. Click on the button.
So they probably, in addition to that, need to send us an email so we know that we have people not from the other side of the world who cannot come actually win the prize.
Yeah, probably US.
I mean, you could win it and ruin it for other people. So if you're not going to come, don't enter the contest.
But there's already people in the contest, Will, because it's ongoing.
Not if we started now.
Okay. I guess go ahead and do that.
Do it.
Also, send an email to Sarah, S-A-R-A, at tantrumhouse.com.
And she'll secretly draw your name.
I will make sure you are entered correctly.
It's always a safe thing.
Thank you.
It's always a safe thing to do is email Sarah. So that's good. Are we ready to move into our topic of the podcast?
Let's do it.
Do we have a cool...
Boo. Boo.
Sorry, that's our universal.
The universal cool sound effect.
Let's do it.
What's our topic?
So the topic for this episode is favorite party games. If you haven't already watched my top 10 best ever party games,
which is doing very, very well on YouTube.
On YouTube, it's got a good number of views on it. Go check it out. You can see probably every game we're going to talk about tonight, maybe not, on there and see all the components and hear my thoughts. But I'll probably let you guys lead the charge since I've already talked about my favorite board games.
Well, I know we briefly said, should we define party game?
Never a bad idea.
Briefly?
So. Let's first hear Larry's definition.
Yeah, Larry, what's our definition we're going with for party game?
Party games. I think a party game is something that has a lot of people can play, obviously.
Like
easy to learn.
Always good.
Fun.
Definitely.
No. Okay. This is a really rich definition of party games.
There are some party games that Will enjoys that maybe
not fun.
Other people might not enjoy. Depends on your personality type.
I think if it's fun, it's fun. There's no arguing there. Fun is fun. There's a saying about that.
Is there a shirt?
There's a shirt. Yeah, I mean, I think everything Larry just said is pretty much correct. It's the type of game that a bunch of people can play that doesn't take a long time to learn. I think party games tend to be a little bit louder, maybe. Like, there's less contemplative, quiet focus and more interaction between players, probably.
So does that mean Codenames wouldn't be a party game?
I mean, there's interaction. There's still, yeah, that's... I mean, obviously, you're going to say Codenames is one of your favorite party games.
Definitely.
I've played games of Codenames that got very loud and exciting. Right. So,
there is. The potential is there.
For sure. Ask Amy about it.
I definitely lean more towards the thinky party games than the loud, obnoxious, laughing party games.
It is interesting. Most, or like, word or letter-based games... I wouldn't consider to be like strategy games, but I also don't know that I would consider them to be party games.
You know, Codenames box says number one party game on the box cover.
Well, if it says that, it must be true. What it, like Scrabble and word games, like, do you think of those as being party games?
Well,
Scrabble, no.
Because it's not a high player count.
Player Jam.
Letter Jam, I don't think is a party game because of the amount of strategy and it's... basically a silent game.
But yeah, categories and Butter Dash, I would.
I kind of feel like any game that is subject, like Letter Jam, to long periods of silence while you're waiting for a person to take their turn. Like, if it can have analysis paralysis, it's not a party game.
I agree. I'm on board with this. All right, so we're talking about games
but
that aren't.
Where words, a letter word game.
Right.
I think that is a party game.
I'm with you, Ryan.
Breaking the stereotype.
Go for it, Sarah.
I was going to say, I agree with Ryan on the long periods of silence, except for there's plenty of party games where somebody has to give a clue where they sit there contemplating what that should be.
Bad party game.
Oh, like Hues and Cues or Wavelengths.
Yeah, there's plenty of...
I don't know. It's no longer a party.
I'm on board. Me and Ryan are at a party. All right, so throw stuff out there. Who's starting? What are we talking about?
Well,
what is?
I have a game that I was put in the party game category, but I've never played it, and I heard it's really good. It's called Time's Up. Has anybody played Time's Up?
Have not.
Okay.
Is it? Nobody knows.
Knows? All right. Well,
awkward.
Email
Sounds
Sarah,
great.
Sara at teachermouse.com. Why we haven't played Time's Up.
Kevin, what's your favorite party game?
Other than Codenames?
Is that your favorite?
I would put Codenames as my number one party game.
Okay, cool.
Oh, man. I like Medium. Medium is high up there. The one thing about Medium, though, is a party filler game. It's just such a short game that that it doesn't take a lot of time. So I don't know if like it's a game that I don't want to play like
for a half hour.
For a half hour.
I agree with that. It's a great 15-minute game. After that, it starts to stretch a little bit.
So more like an icebreaker.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a great
icebreaker.
We're
going to have a top 10 icebreakers.
Oh, we can do that. Oh, I like that idea.
Put it on the list.
actually, if I had to choose another one, I would do the Cthulhu one. The
Yeah, right. Good taste.
Yeah.
Don't mess with Cthulhu.
Yeah. Don't mess with Cthulhu.
Not that one. The other Cthulhu.
Yeah. No. Don't mess with Cthulhu. It's fun. Because it has that sort of social deduction going on, but it's...
I agree. Tell me more.
There's so many good moments in that game where you're having that fun, but you're also like... It's not like... I'm not a big fan of the werewolf games, but because of the vote, how the voting works, I like how the voting works in the Cthulhu one.
So I would say Werewords is one of my favorite party games, and we play that a lot with my family because it has the 20 questions aspect and a little bit of the who's which character, a little bit of deduction, social deduction in there.
Yeah, my family enjoys that one as well. It is an easy one to jump into. And actually, the app on that one is pretty nice. Like, it makes it a little more fun to have the voice telling you what to do and the music and stuff. That's a great one. The game Trap Words kind of reminds me a little bit of Where Words, but with a lot more theme to it. Like, I think most word games tend to be just, like, word, generic word games. And I think they did a good job of making that one a fun, you know, dungeon crawl type of experience, which is pretty slick.
Oh, does Larry have one? Psychic Larry?
Oh, yeah. What about 13 Clues? I think that's one that Amy likes to play a lot. We play it a lot with her family. It's easy to learn. Pretty quick.
I think there are a lot of good games that are based on that clue framework, whatever that is, where you're just trying to figure out person, place, and thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% sure that it's a party game, but I've definitely seen people do really good parties, like mystery dinner theater types of things. And any of those games, like Sherlock 13, Clues, the new Key, what's it called from?
It's called Key. The Key.
The Key from Haba.
Mm-hmm. Bob's Burgers Clue.
Bob's Burgers Clue. All great potential parties.
So a game I would like to play, party game that I know is on Will's list, so he can wax eloquent about it, is Two Brooms and a Boom. That I've never played.
You haven't played it?
Never played it.
Oh, no. I really? Didn't know that. Yeah, that was definitely going to be the
you
one.
You have failed, Will.
Oh, he won't play War Chest with me either. It's not really my fault. Ryan, have you played Two Brooms and a Boom?
Yeah, I have. I didn't actually enjoy it that much.
Oh, no.
There we go.
Tell us why.
Because
it was my first time playing it.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the convention, so I was real tired.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of kids there.
There were.
That were just being super crazy, and I was like, I got to go to bed.
The first year, we did just let everybody play it, and there were so many kids. It was like a little overwhelming. They were probably my kids mostly. And then the next year we did it, we split the adults and the kids, which made it much better.
I'll have to try it again.
It is a great game. In the game, it's very, very simple. You get one card handed to you. You're either on the red team or the blue team. Most of the people are going to be just average old, you know, schmo, joes. What are those called? Villagers, town people. Somebody...
Average Joe's.
Average Joe. Somebody's going to be the president. Somebody is going to be the doctor. Those two have to meet each other during the game. However, you're literally just walking around a room trying to talk to people. So it's very casual. You actually split into two rooms. You don't know who's on the red team, who's on the blue team. The bad guys, the bomber is trying to find the president and identify him during the game. Everybody's really trying to find the bomber and the president because you want to know. Because you want to be able to report back to your team, the two or three people that you've gotten lucky and trusted, what information you have. And the game takes place, it's very quick, because I think you play like 4 minutes for the first round. You literally just walking around talking to people, trying to convince somebody else to show you their card so you can show them theirs. After that, you vote on it, like a couple people to switch, maybe like two people from each room, swap sides. You do it again for 2 minutes, swap again for 1 minute, and that final minute is intense. Like I figured out who it is. I know. You run to the president. You tell them, don't tell. Oh, you already told the bomber. Shoot, we're hosed. What are we going to do? Like, you try to figure out all this information. Heart-pounding, palpitation-inducing excitement.
So are you trying to keep the president and the bomber in different rooms, or
yes.
how do the teams win?
That is correct. In the last round, you get a final vote, and the whole goal is to make sure the bomber is in the other room, assuming you're on the blue team. If you're on the red team, you want the bomber and the president to be in the same room. And so you're all voting on who you actually vote for, who will be in charge of your room. That person gets to pick the two people to switch. So you're trying to make sure it's your guy that got voted to make the right switch, to get the people in the other room. And then when the moderator or whoever says, all right, which room is the president in? And they raise their hand and everybody's like, you know, half the people are like, oh, I didn't even know that was the president. And the other half are like, yes, we got this, you know. And then, all right, bomber, which room are you in? We got them separated. Yay. The best role in the entire game, though, is that there is actually a double agent on each team. And so your card is blue, but it says red team on it. So you can still flash it to people. They'll think they're on your team. They'll give you all their secret information. Then you run back to your team. You show them your card. They're like, they see it and they think, oh no, you're blue. And you're like, no, look, read the fine print. I'm the red guy. I'm the traitor. I'm the guy on your team. Oh, so exciting. So exciting.
For secret identity games, I think Secret Hitler does a really good job. But the game we played over TantrumCon Digital, Night of the Ninja, I think every time I've played that or overheard it played, it's always been very raucous, just a great time.
Ooh, I like that game. Maybe because I won it. But.
Yes, Sidekick Larry won at TantrumCon. We actually played it in our community game night this past month. I don't think it's quite out yet for purchase, but it will be soon from Brotherwise Games. It's called Knight of the Ninja, and you're on two different teams, and you have assassins and spies, and they activate in a certain order. So the more powerful cards activate later, but you might get killed before you have a chance to use them.
Yeah, it's got a great balance of like ability to tell the truth and the lie, to be able to get information, to still feel safe even if you didn't quite achieve what you needed to achieve. And yeah, every time we've played it, people always ask, where did this come from? I actually got an email after our community game night, where can I buy this game? It is a lot of fun. It's a cool one.
So a game I like to play, even just with random strangers at conventions, is Happy Salmon.
Yay!
That's the end of that.
And that's all I have to say.
Happy Salmon is definitely on my top party game list.
It is. It's one of those icebreaker ones again, but I agree. It is a great lose your voice, having so much fun kind of game.
Happy Salmon is my run the other way game because I am not coordinated enough to actually match up with other people, and it's so loud, and I'm like, and I freeze.
I have to admit that if you weren't good at the game, it would be a terrible game. My dad hates the game. But if you can pull off a win every like third or fourth game, very rewarding.
All right. Tell us about Throw. I see some of these games in front of me here that the podcast listeners can't see. But tell us about Throw Burrito, because I have no idea what that game is about.
Okay. So Throw Burrito is kind of like Spoons meets Dodgeball. In the game, you have a bunch of random cards with hilarious illustrations on them. You're trying to rifle through them in order to get, I think, three or four matching ones. And if you're able to get those four matching cards, then you get to do whatever the action is on it. And that's really like the confusing part in the game, because it might be that you draw the showdown, I don't remember what the words are, and you and one other person have to chuck actual foam burritos at each other, which is great. Or it might be that everybody else at the table has to do it and you're out of it. And so you have to pay attention to whatever your set collection was. Everybody else has to watch you as well. And then you like, I laid these three cards. Good luck, you guys. And then you back out and then everybody's like, oh, was I supposed to grab the burrito? I don't know what to do. Not a lot, a lot of great chaos and confusion. The best part is when you get to like those showdowns and you, like, the first person misses, and then the second person ducks, and then it's still going on. Like, you have to pick up the burrito from across the room, hunt each other down, get the other guy out. It's a lot of great, crazy, crazy fun times.
I've seen this played long distance at Gen Con in some of the bigger hallways, where people are throwing the burrito impressive distances to try and get
the... Ducking and rolling.
Yeah. It's entertaining to watch.
I think a game that Amy would like me to mention is reverse charades. So not like normal charades, but reverse charades. So instead of one person acting out the charade and everybody guessing, the whole team acts out the charade.
And one person guesses?
And one person is there.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure on that one person.
It is. But I feel like it makes it a lot better for the people acting out. A lot of more people get involved because it's not just them themselves standing up there. And it's a lot of group things, which can turn into a lot of funny mishaps while you're trying to act out. We've done it with family a couple times, and Amy's family seems to like it a lot.
And memories, right? Like, maybe that's actually part of the definition of party games, is the type of game where you can, like, remember the funny thing that happened 10 times ago when you played this, because the Murph brothers were both the spies at Dice Tower Con playing Two Rooms and a Boom, and it was insane. Like, if you've got the ability to create those type of experience memories, that is, like, the good party game level.
Or when Jonah lied to us and
right, and Don't Mess with Cthulhu had everybody convinced.
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I was just saying, too bad Jonah isn't here to talk about all of the drawing games.
Right?
Telestrations and Pictomania and all of those monstrosity.
All of his
so
favorites.
Many drawing games.
What do we feel about those? Because drawing games do have like a definite curve towards, if you can draw better, you're probably going to do better. What's our favorite game that balances that out? Do we have one of those? What's the, you in the audience at home, what's your favorite drawing game that it levels the playing field?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Monstrosity is just so bizarre what you're trying to draw that it, even if you're not good at drawing, it doesn't really matter because the thing has 6 legs and 4 eyeballs and it, you know.
It's going to look like a monster.
Yeah. So I think that one's one of the few that does that.
I like Pictionary. I mean, I know that's not helpful for people who can't draw, but Pictionary is a fun game.
Or what is the one where we played at Saturday morning board game show where you had to hold the paper and the other to draw with the...
Oh, Upside Drawn.
Yes. It's a Telestrations, but Upside Drawn.
Yes. One that is not a drawing, but you use pieces in the game. And it's a newer one that hasn't been out very long, Cloud Control. I've had a lot of fun playing that one. You use these cloud shapes to try and guess or give clues to the other players for certain words. And we've had some hilarious things come up with that one. That one's from 25th Century Games. There are all these little cloud pieces that there might be some like triangle-ish shapes or just all kinds of stuff. And you have to, you know, your clue is basket. Well, you have to figure out how to put these pieces together to try and get your team to guess. So very interesting, a little bit different way of trying to, you're not drawing, but you're still using shapes to try and relay a message.
What was the game that had the dice and you drew on the different sides of the die and then you would roll it and people would try to guess what your
oh, that was Droll.
Droll. Yeah, they were like giant dice and you actually like you had to race to cover as many sides of the die as you could because once you rolled it, people could only look at like the sides that were up and you may not even had enough time to draw all whatever 5 sides that are visible. So yeah, that was a fun one.
I think that was from Blue Orange.
Yeah, maybe. I don't remember who that one's from. That was pretty neat though. I agree.
Yeah, so you rolled, but if you rolled poorly and you didn't finish drawing on all the sides, the good drawing might be facing
the
table so nobody could see it. So it did make it interesting. Everybody else had to guess what, and it was something complex, like a whole, like the Little Red Riding Hood or something like that, where it's like there were several things that you could use to try and depict that story. But
yeah, I think I had Star Wars, and I'm like trying to draw R2-D2, and I was like, uh-oh, this is not going well.
It's a trash can.
Right. You're here with a trash can and a stick, and you're like, no, I promise, it's Star Wars.
I know we talked about Captain Sonar earlier in today's episode. I know it probably doesn't fit all the categories for party game, but I think it's a party game because you do need a lot of people to play it, and it usually comes out at parties.
And it is fun, and you do make memories.
You do make lots of memories. We
it
played
does it. Take a long time to explain, but other than that, four out of five.
But if you already know how to play it, then it's fast.
It is great, too. It is one of my favorites to play at conventions because you've got a bunch of people who probably do know how to play it. And it is loud and intense and lots of fun, yeah, for sure.
I think one that we haven't mentioned yet, which is a very popular party game, is Just One.
We haven't mentioned it yet.
We haven't. I just saw it on the Calyx, and I was going to say something.
Good job. I've actually never played Just One.
It's got a very simple concept to it. It's basically everybody is writing a word on their whiteboard thing, which is a cool shape in this game, and you then have the guesser close their eyes basically, and everybody shows each other the clues that they've written, and any duplicate clues get erased. And so then, and it's the whole thing is cooperative, so then when you turn it around, the guesser still has to guess what the answer is, and if 2 or 3 people wrote the same clue, now they're down to like one clue to guess it off of. So you got to kind of write like more obscure words as your clue, but then if you've got 5 super obscure words, like, how do I guess this? I don't have any idea how to tie these 4 random things together. Yeah, it's a nice, quick, easy one that's a lot of fun to play.
So one category that we haven't really talked about, which often falls into party games, are trivia games. So things like Wits and Wagers, Old School Trivial Pursuit, except that might not be a party game because it's like, 3 hours.
You got to be smart. I'm not smart enough to play trivia games. Wits and Wagers is a good game because you don't have to actually know the stuff. You just have to know which one of your friends is smart.
Well, one game that it is helpful to be smart, but you don't have to be, is the game of Wolf. And I know Ryan and his family have played that quite a bit.
We'll play that a lot. My dad's a trivia master, so we'll bust out Wolf and try to beat him.
Isn't there one with a cow in the title or something, or there is a...
Herd mentality?
Is that a party game, kind of trivia game-ish?
It's a little bit like Just One, where everybody is trying to get the... It's the opposite, I guess. Everybody's trying to get the same answer. And so if you're the odd man out, and it's super random stuff, like farm animal, and then everybody just writes the first word that comes to their mind. So everybody obviously writes cow, since the name of the game is herd mentality. And then Jonah,
I'm pretty sure it was horse.
Horse, right? And then looks at everyone like, you guys, horse is the farm animal. And we're like, no, cow, definitely. And then you get stuck with a foam cow. And if you're stuck with him at the end of the game, you definitely lose. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Well, I think we need to say goodbye so that we can talk about Loki here.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Spoilers.
Bye.
Wow. Will's just going to say goodbye.
Roll it out.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
Sweet, let's talk about Loki.
Well, you missed the first...
I know.
So did you hear us talk about it a little
bit? I did.
Okay.
Good job. I liked that you guys made straight up predictions and then most of you were wrong. But it was great that you attempted it. I was impressed. I can't remember. Jonah was like, oh yeah. Jonah said, they're going to team up. Both Lokis are definitely going to team up. Kevin said, they're not going to team up. They did team up. And it was a pretty great episode. I enjoyed the Loki banter. So we're talking about episodes three and four?
Three and four.
And I've enjoyed it thoroughly. Maybe my favorite TV series Marvel thing.
So three is when they actually get to the planet that they shouldn't be at. And then they're still there at the beginning of four, correct?
Right. The ship that they were supposed to escape on explodes. The incoming planet or whatever crashes into it. They stand there devastated. We all assume... No one assumed they were going to die. We all knew they were going to get off somehow.
Well, I would say out of one, two, three, and four, three was, for me, the least... favorite episode so far, because there was a lot of character development, but there wasn't a lot of storyline development going on. Like the story arc was very one note. It's like they made it to the planet and they're sort of there
and they didn't get off.
While I appreciated the last scene where they filmed the whole thing in one shot,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they filmed that last part where they were trying to figure out what to do, running around, and I was kind of confused as to what was going on.
Yeah, Ryan, tell us what was happening.
Yeah. So they're trying to escape the planet. There you go.
And they didn't make it.
I felt a little bit like they kept foreshadowing or hinting or whatever, saying they were going to have this specific, like, awesome scene coming up. Like, they're on the train. They're going to have to infiltrate the ship. And then that didn't happen. And then they're going to have to, like... go through the city and get on the ship. That didn't happen. I felt like we had some cool scenes, but I thought they hinted at possibly cooler
more
action
epic.
Scenes. Yeah, more epic action scenes that didn't happen, and I was a little disappointed.
I even actually thought, while it was cool that they apparently shot it in one shot or whatever, I actually kind of felt like that looked more like a ride that I had been on at Hollywood's Universal Studios or something than an actual, like, the world is falling apart. I was like, this is weird. What is happening? I did enjoy the episode. I liked the back and forth that they had going on, and they were, like, learning that the other person had other magic that they didn't know that they probably could have. Like, I thought that was kind of cool. I liked that they spelled out a little more of her character, but... I agree. Let's move on to episode four.
Well,
where the magic happened.
Did they explain why Loki, the Tom Hiddleston Loki, why he wouldn't ride a train backwards?
I mean, I think it was the same reason she did. Like, you want to be able to see what's going on.
I think it's just a quirk. I think they were just giving him, like, quirky personality.
Okay.
I mean, how often is he riding trains in Asgard?
I thought
anyway?
It was more he didn't want his back to the room.
That's
but
I
it was
because you don't want to get stabbed.
Right. That's about vertigo.
But the But the room had entrances on both sides. That's what I didn't understand. Because she was...
I honestly thought it was just about vertigo.
I thought it was just a bit of, like, they needed to say something before they sit down.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not completely convinced that Sylvie is, in fact, a Loki variant.
What?
Since apparently the TVA is lying.
You know? I mean, and she's do you not believe the flashback at the beginning of episode four?
She's clearly the Enchantress who is an Asgardian. I don't know that she's Loki. I mean,
but there is a female Loki in the comics.
Sure, but this is the Enchantress. Like, one way or another, this is the Enchantress character. It may, in fact, be
that
a variant
that
Loki
is who Sylvie
who is the Enchantress, but because she's the Enchantress, I'm not convinced that she is a Loki.
Are we sure?
It seems
that-
like a lot of work to establish her to be something just... So they could later be like, no, she's not really
I think they're like, well, they're saying you're just falling in love with yourself because you're a narcissist. And then they're going to be like, actually, she's not you.
You can fall in love with
her.
I
don't know.
Can you fall? I think you're still allowed to fall in love with an alternate dimension of yourself. Although you probably do share the same genetic makeup still.
Yeah, it's problematic.
It does seem problematic.
All right, so episode four.
So on that line, though. Is the Tom Hiddleston Loki the one that we've known this whole time, or is there an exact match of, or a different Loki that's actually the real? I don't know. I missed the talks.
Right.
The Loki that we have watched on all these Marvel movies so far, that is the Loki that we're...
Right, no, but
I
mean, it's...
That is the Loki that got sucked out. Using the Mind Stone or whatever the stone
but
is.
But he didn't have the progression of all the later movies.
He
was an earlier
version
of him.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes
and
no.
He doesn't have the character development from Thor 2 and Thor 3.
Yes.
But he does have everything about Loki up to that point. And he's seen himself die.
Right. And he saw his mom die.
He's watched Thor 2, Thor 3, and Infinity
War. He saw them. He just didn't live them. That's funny.
Okay, now I'm more confused, but let's continue to episode four.
Episode four opens, the elevator opens, and I thought, there's no way they're going to show us right here in the first 15 seconds of the show, the timekeepers. And then they did. And I was very excited.
Sort of.
The fake.
And then I immediately thought, Wizard of Oz.
Yep, that's what I thought too. The whole time, Wizard of Oz. This is exactly
like,
what's
nope,
going to happen.
I knew it. It was propaganda.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. Like, there's so many times where their whole point is stopping this variant, right? So why don't they let her die is what bothers me. Why do they keep keeping her alive? She's going to die in this apocalypse thing, but they save her. Question her.
They could have just left both of them
there. They've been done with the whole
thing. Where they're like killing other people, but they're like, okay, you come with us.
Collect
now her. We're going to go to this room and then say, kill them. Like, you had so many chances before. You didn't even question them or anything.
You got a very specific code of conduct.
Why? They just straight up disintegrate Mobius.
That's
and they're
true.
Like, okay, we're going to take you up the elevator and then disintegrate you.
True.
What is going on?
Great point. Well, I do. So I think that is the big question. Who's the Wizard of Oz? Who's behind these androidial? I was also confused by, don't we know a lot of androids that we love and are very human-like? And then they were like, oh, they're just androids.
My prediction, Loki.
You think so?
A Loki.
We had that prediction too.
I don't predict it. I think it's a possibility and I think it's hilarious. And I hope it's true, but I don't think it is. What do you think, Kevin?
I don't know.
Is it Loki behind the mask?
Is there people behind there, or is it just, is there someone behind, or is there not someone behind?
So an interesting comment I saw today was Dr. Doom. I don't even know. Like,
that's weird.
Yeah. So like Kang and... there was another one.
I have seen theories that it could be Kang the Conqueror, which I would be okay with. That'd be interesting.
Is it just Stan Lee?
That'd be even more interesting.
Stan Lee.
Is the
Ryan. That seems like it could just be the answer.
I do think there's a small
not.
Chance that it could be Loki, because I think that would be great if he was like, I have to get rid of all the other Lokis because they're the ones that are most likely to thwart me, and that's why these Lokis teaming up does create a variant. However... Seems like way too much work for Loki.
In the commercials for this, there are images of Loki I have not yet seen. And I'm not sure how this TVA Loki would – how he would progress to that. I mean, surely he could. Sure. Well, but I think there might be another Loki.
Going back to Stan Lee, though, wasn't there one of the after credit scenes on one of the movies where Stan Lee was talking to three guys on a planet with their like space helmets on? Do you guys remember this?
Yeah, it's.
Were they the timekeepers?
I don't know.
I think they were like, wasn't one of them Thanos? I can't remember which.
I think there's a group called like the Watchers.
Yeah, the Watchers. Yeah,
and that's who he's talking about. I'm not sure.
Seems like that could be.
So also. The disintegrating, apparently it doesn't actually disintegrate.
Right.
Because
teleports,
yeah.
Transports.
So do we think that where they were teleported to only has their variants, or is it all the variants?
I say just their variants. It's a Loki planet.
Let's make some predictions on this, because I think this is the fun part.
We rewound to view that last part, and there's three people there. There's an old Loki with like the ridiculous getup from the comics.
Right.
And there's like a young Loki, I guess, with a crocodile or something.
Did you know Loki is a crocodile in one of the comics?
Oh, I did not.
There you go. It's actually a Loki.
It actually is a Loki.
Well, there's four Lokis.
And
there.
Then the guy on the left wasn't sure he was a Loki because he looked like Black Thor. He had a hammer.
Yeah. I don't know who he was supposed to be, but and so I think he was another Loki.
Yeah, if he's not Loki, then I thought he was Black Thor.
Oh, so. I think they're all Lokis. I don't know why they said, like, he said, am I dead? And they were like, not yet, but you have to hurry. Mm. Like, so my thought was the same as you. Like, oh, apparently if a variant gets out of control, they just banish them to variant land where they banish all the same variants.
Which is kind of like, what's the planet that Thor went to in Thor Ragnarok? I wonder if it's like that. I don't remember what it's called.
The never or
nowhere.
Yeah.
Is it nowhere the giant skull thing?
Yes.
He's like one of the original.
He is. Yeah.
Time
the Celestials.
Lords. Yeah. Celestial. Yeah. That's the word.
So, because the zappers are orange, are they like trapped in the Soul Stone or something?
Oh.
Good idea, Ryan. So somebody else was trying to figure out why, like, what is going on that the Infinity Stones don't work in some areas? Where would they be able to be that? Why some of them work or some places they do work? Are they just a farce? Like, what's going on with the Infinity Stones?
I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know if they'll
are we on a different time? Like, where are we in history of the Marvel Universe that...
This is pre-Infinity War.
Okay.
Well, the Loki that was pulled out was pre-Infinity War, but we don't know...
Are they outside of time
TVA.
Yeah. I kept thinking he knows where all these are, and apparently they're not under lock and key. And he's heading back to, like,
his timeline,
the reality in general... He should be grabbing these things.
He probably has. He's got a stash.
Oh, he's probably got a whole pocket full.
Right. He's got his own Infinity Gauntlet ready
to
go.
He's got like two. I mean, there's enough there.
He's
got boots and, yeah, he's got everything.
The most powerful.
Well, you have to talk about the meme for the four Lokis, but with Owen Wilson. Tell us about this real quick.
It was great. I'm just scrolling through Facebook yesterday, and I got to, it was like the shot where Loki's like laying on the ground looking up after he just asked, like, am I dead? But they had cut out his face and replaced it with Owen Wilson. And he was like, am I dead? And then when they showed the other four Lokis, it was like pictures of Owen Wilson from four other movies. So it was like country western Owen Wilson and like feature. I was like, this is my favorite meme.
Awesome.
Yeah. It'd be really interesting to find out where they are. Did you notice that their little batons have like an orange one, which apparently zaps them to their own variant world? But sometimes they can set that thing to purple. Does purple kill you? Does it send you to future variant world? I want to know why the colors. Hope this gets explained. I also want to just know, where is he at? Can you get out of this variant world, obviously? Because he's coming back.
Yeah, I mean, they got out of nowhere, even though supposedly you never leave nowhere.
I don't remember that part, but...
Well, Loki obviously left nowhere with Thor and...
I thought it was just like
so
an outer
did Valkyrie.
Space planet.
Well, yes, but supposedly it was hard to leave.
Okay, I think dimensions and planets are different.
Wait, are you talking about the junk planet or whatever?
Yeah.
With the
yeah,
that's not nowhere. Nowhere is the big celestial
floating head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So where's like the K-N-O. Junk planet? Where's
the? Yeah, it's just a junk.
Yes.
Planet.
Yeah. Where's the? I was talking about the junk planet on.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but. That might be where they are because it does look like they're on a junk planet. It's
true.
Mm. I mean, so possibilities. There was like apocalyptic.
Yeah, I was getting the
skyscrapers
two
and stuff in the background.
All right, I need predictions. Give me a prediction, Ryan. What is going to happen in episode 5?
I don't know. There's really no way of knowing.
Kevin, what do you got? Anything? What are you thinking? What do you expect to see?
Oh, I just think he'll just team back up with Lady Loki again.
Yep. Even though she's not there? She's not.
Well, no, he'll get back to where they're supposed to be, TVA. Yep.
How many episodes have we got left? Two?
Two.
And I don't think they reveal anything until maybe an end credits scene. Or maybe right now. I don't know. They've been switching it up.
I think they got to do a hard tie-in to Doctor Strange and the multiverse.
Do you think we'll see a cameo?
We're creating a multiverse, and Doctor Strange has the time stone.
All right. Like, that was going to be my prediction. I think we're going to see Doctor Strange in this episode or next. I hope we do.
I think it also ties in with Wanda.
What?
She's a Nexus character. And basically, any time that she messes up something, it's a Nexus event, which throws everything off.
Okay.
Which I think that's part of, maybe that's part of the issue, is her timeline. I don't know.
I also predict that it's not Loki operating the curtain, even though I hope it is. And I hope we do get to see the Loki versus Loki fight, where we don't know which Loki it is.
That's what I was looking forward to.
But I don't think it's going to happen, but I do hope it happens. And final prediction. I got nothing else. I was just hoping that something would come to me.
I predict that there is a major character from the MCU universe that shows up in the 5th episode.
Oh, we already had Sif. She's pretty major.
No.
But she did show up. That was good.
No,
was
so good. A major a character from another show or movie.
That would be terrible torture. That would be worse than just like, I don't know.
I don't think it's going to be Thor, but I have a feeling it'll either be Doctor Strange or somebody else from any of the Doctor Strange movies or Wanda.
Or
Agatha.
Or Agatha.
But if she just shows up, and she's in the dark now. So who knows?
Tune in 2 weeks to find out if anything we said was right.
It was Agatha all along.
That's right.